Welcome to East Lake. It's a church for everyone. And we all know Christmas is about family and office parties and presents and good food. But amongst all of it, in the holiday that we celebrate about Jesus, how do we make sure we remember Jesus? I'm Robin, glad you're here. Next weekend, on Sunday, we're going to have our Christmas service. So have all the special music. And you saw Camille mention the chili cook-off that we're going to have. So bring chili, immediately followed by blue flame contest. So we'll have a chili cook-off there. So only the guys got that. Okay, so grab your notes if you would. During this season, when there's so much going on, we've started this series called Unto Us. And it's an opportunity to just make sure that amongst all of the commotion, all the different things that go on at Christmas, that we remember Jesus, that we remember him. The Catholic priest was looking out the window in the church building, and he sees this little boy roll up to the nativity scene in front of the church, and he swipes the baby Jesus and puts it in his red wagon and starts to go down the sidewalk. And the priests think, well, there goes the baby Jesus. And it wasn't that long before the little boy comes back and he rolls up the nativity scene. He takes the baby Jesus and puts him in the straw. And the priest says, well, I've got to go ask what's going on. And so he goes out. He says, hey, what are you doing with the little baby Jesus? And he said, well, it's the day after Christmas. And I said a prayer that Jesus would bring me a red wagon. And if he did, he would be the first one to get to ride in it. How do we remember Jesus? How do we make sure that the holiday that we celebrate about Jesus, we remember Jesus at Christmas time? It's a big idea this weekend. You can write in your notes. God wants us to find Jesus. And today we're going to talk about the famous story of the wise men. Where do they fit in this whole idea about Jesus? How did they find Jesus? How did they remember him? And it can help us remember him, the story of the wise men. And so let's just start to read it. It's in your notes and it'll come up here. Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from the eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, where is the newborn king of the Jews? So the wise men come rolling in. At the time of Herod, if you're making notes, just write that down. Jesus arrives, he's born as a king into a country that already has a king. So there's a natural conflict and tension that's going to arrive. And Herod is sort of this person that's been promoted up through the ranks. In Israel now, they're an occupied state. They're ruled by Rome. And Herod is this person that's been promoted up through the ranks. He's not all of Jew. In fact, they haven't had a Jewish king for 400 years. And so Herod's this guy. He's promoted up through the ranks. Have you ever been at work and somebody got promoted and you thought, oh, not that guy, not that girl. Nobody wants her to be the manager. And yet somehow they work their way in and they get the promotion. That's King Herod. Nobody wants that guy to be in charge, but the Romans know that somebody has to keep all these Jewish people in line, and so they promote Herod up, and now he's the king. He's the king there, and he's a brutal king. He rules by force. Maybe you work with someone like that. They're not very understanding. They don't ask many questions. When you make a mistake, they just pound you. Or maybe you grew up in a home like that. It's one of your relatives. When you make a mistake, they just pound you. It's not about talking about it. It's about hit first, ask questions later. That's Herod. In fact, the emperor of Rome, who was a brutal person, said, I would rather be one of Herod's pigs than one of his sons. Because Herod had assassinated two of his sons and had assassinated his own wife because he was always suspicious that someone was coming onto the scene that was going to take what he had gotten shortcuts to earn. In my note to self, anytime you take shortcuts, you're always sort of insecure and defensive because you know you haven't earned something. So somebody might take it or you might lose it, and that's King Herod. So let's keep reading. Look in your notes. We saw, this is the wise men, we saw his star as it rose, and we've come to worship him. King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. So here's what's happening. It's when everyone at work is walking on eggshells because they don't want to get someone mad. Maybe you're looking forward to a family event and you've already decided, I'm not going to get them angry this year, because if I get them angry, the whole event is like a bummer because they get mean, you know, hurt, mad, mean. And maybe you work with someone like that or you grew up with someone like that and they were just great until they got angry. And then when they got angry, who do you walk on eggshells with? You're just always really, really super careful because, you know, they have a short fuse. And when they get angry, bad things happen. And that's what's going on here. That's what's going on in the story about Jesus, is the king is about to get really super angry and everybody's concerned. They're like, oh man, not again. Don't get that guy mad. And the wise men, they don't cause it, but they kind of step into this whole thing. You know, they step into an environment very, very tense, and everybody's, you know, sort of angry about stuff. Let's read about them. It's the next thing in your notes. Herod immediately calls two emergency meetings. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, "Where is the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem in Judah," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." So Herod, the first thing he does is he tries to find some answers in church. And what he finds out is the church people can tell him facts about God, but they can't help him understand God. And it does seem like people are looking less and less to church for answers. You know, they're not looking there anymore. And there's a saying that you can put a wheelbarrow in a garage and it doesn't make it a car. You know, you can put a Christian in a church and it doesn't necessarily mean that they know God. And Herod comes and says, "Explain this to me." And they just sort of quote some facts. And maybe you've had that experience before. At some point in your life, you turned to the church for something and all you got was sort of pat answers. It wasn't like anybody connected with you or got into your story or anything. They just sort of gave you the church line. And that's Herod. He approaches some leaders in the church and said, "What is going on?" And they kind of back up and they said, "Well, you know, this is what the church says about that." And there's no answers there. You can put a wheelbarrow in a garage, it won't be a car. You can put a person in a church and they won't become Christian. And I wanted to say this, you're a Christ follower, don't ever let church become enough. It never will be. Always want to know Jesus. Always make it about Jesus. Always want to know him more. That's what it's about. And do you notice in the story, the church leaders don't even ask Herod if they can go see Jesus? They're content just being in church, church potlucks, you know, church activities and church services, and they have a chance to see, you know, God's come to earth, and they're like, well, they don't even say a word. Now, that's one meeting. Here's the next meeting. Let's look at our notes. Then Herod called a private meeting. So you know what it's like when there's a private meeting. You don't get invited, with the wise men. And he learned from them the time when the star appeared. Then he told them, "Go to Bethlehem." Catch this part. Herod talking now, the king. Then he told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child." And if you think about it, you just want to yell out, "Liar!" He doesn't want to worship the child. He's lying. Have you heard any good whoppers lately? Have you been talking with anyone lately and you knew they were lying? I had an awkward situation happen at work. I'm in sales and I was at a manager's desk. And they instituted this program we had to do. Everybody had to call 20 people, and you had to write it on a piece of paper. They don't think we're making enough phone calls. So you have to write all the people's name down and their number, and you have to turn it in before you get home, like a second grader. Anyways, and so, you know, you had to do that every single day. And so I'm at the manager's desk one day, and this one salesperson rolls up, and he hands his paper into the manager, and he says, "I made all of my 20 calls," and the manager says, "Okay, great, well, let's just take a look here." And he turns over to his computer and he opens up a screen and it has the salesman's name, and he had made one call. The salesman didn't know that his desk phone was in it by way of software connected into the computers, and the managers could see how many calls you actually made. And that's when the manager looked up at me and said, "Robin, can you excuse us for a moment?" And as I turned to leave, the salesman had his head hanging low. because he had been caught in a lie. When's the last time someone caught you in, not a white lie, because I don't know that God colors them. He just got caught in a lie. Or when's the last time you were tempted to lie? You know, or you told a lie and nobody caught you, but then they asked you a question and you had to quickly think of another lie. Have you ever done multiple choice lying? Like if you're a really good liar, like you get so good that you get to choose the lie before you say it. And then if you're really good, you can think of even the next lie you're going to tell to cover that lie. That's where all that goes. And Christmas is a time that we get to sort of check in. And I wanted to say something to you, because this is really important, because this isn't the funny part. Some of you have really been hurt because someone lied. Not because they screwed up or made a mistake, not because they failed to keep a promise. They lied to you. You've been really hurt by that. Jesus will never lie to you. He's not afraid of anything that he'll have to be involved in, that he has, because that's why we lie. We're scared. We don't want to go through something. Jesus will never lie. He will be straight up with you always in your life. And so now these wise men, they're in this whole thing. And I don't know if you knew that this was the whole story, because when you see the Christmas cards, the wise men just are all covered with glitter and they're just sort of looking their wise, and you don't realize there's a lot of stuff going on in the Christmas story. Did you know all this was going on? You have a brutal, lying king trying to get to Jesus, and the wise men walk into this thing and they're all freaked out and they're following a star, which doesn't seem so wise. But anyways, I mean, you know, it's just like that's the story that we're in. Now let's see what they do. Look in your notes and we'll read that part. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too. And then go to the next one. After this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. And so now Herod is the one, the king is the one that sends them on their way, but God wants to make sure that they know that he's the one that's drawing them. And here's the lesson. All these things that seem like coincidences sometimes in our lives are not. Or all the things that other people think they're causing to happen is actually the Lord himself. Even the bad things sometimes, God is saying what the enemy intended for evil, I have intended for good. He wants to remind them, you just were with this crazy king and he thinks he's in charge. The Bible says the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. He's not in charge. He's not writing the Christmas story. He's not the one putting this together. I am. Go back and ask him and see if he can make a star move across the sky. What circumstances are you in? And you thought, oh, that's just natural stuff happening. And it's actually God trying to lead you. Seen any stars lately in your life? And here's the great point of the story is that if I'm willing to follow, God can always guide me. These guys are probably under a lot of pressure, even though they're smart. I mean, they've just come out of a really tense situation, and all of a sudden God shows up. And regardless of how chaotic and pressure-filled your Christmas is, there will be a star there for you. And God can always guide you if you're willing to follow. Have you seen any stars lately and you're just sort of staring at it? Haven't taken that first step yet? Or maybe you thought, oh, come on. That's just natural circumstances. What if it's God put that star in the sky? What if that light is him and he's saying, I'm behind this. I'm doing this. Follow me. This is all about something I'm doing. He reassures the wise men. And if you take the step, what might happen? Let's read it together. They entered the house and saw the child and his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And baby Jesus said, hold the spices, but I'll take the gold. They would have missed all that. what might you miss? Or better said, what aren't you going to miss? Because you can reinterpret it after today and say, I think God put that in my life to follow. It's not random. It doesn't matter who he used. Even if there's a King Herod in your life, it doesn't matter. I'm following the star. Christmas is a time to remember Jesus, not as a historical figure like we remember Abraham Lincoln. It's a time to remember that he's with me now, that he's present, that I can know him. Because let's face it, we can all go through a day like he's just someone that lived way back when. Or you can try to guess at it. I wonder what Jesus would do. Would that be weird for you? If you were with someone all day long, all day, all day, all day, all day, and you're sitting and having coffee with them, and you hear them mumble themselves, I wonder what Robin would have me do. And I'm sitting right there at the table. I could tell you if you asked. It's a time to remember that he's with us. We don't guess at Jesus. We don't try to figure out what he might say. That's what makes him different than everybody else in history. I can guess at Confucius. I can guess at Buddha. I can guess at Abraham Lincoln. I can guess at all those. But Jesus is with me when I remember. And so let's look at a couple points of application. Here's a way to look at it. Who is your king? Who is your king? Who is it that I serve? Who gets my time? Who gets my money? Who's my king? The crowd in this cathedral absolutely sat in hushed silence in the dark. They were at a funeral. It was this mighty French king who called himself the State, the Great One. And he'd left orders that his casket was to be in solid gold, and everybody was to come into the cathedral, and there was to be one candle sitting on his casket that would say, there's just one, and it's me. And when the pastor that was doing the funeral service came out, he came alongside the casket, and there was just this one candle burning there, and he reached over, and he snuffed it out, and he whispered into the darkness, only God is great. He's your king. Christmas is the time that we get to decide who's our king. Who do we obey? Who do we serve? Contrast it with the story of the Huguenots who wanted to have a relationship with Jesus. They bagged religion. They went up and built these communities up in the mountains, and they put these high walls around it to keep everybody out. And finally, the church and everybody else decided there's no way we're going to let you do that. So they send all the armies up to them, because you can get in a big fight over religion during the holidays too. And so they all come up there, and they're going to stop them. You don't get to worship like that. And the general comes, and he throws a spear over the wall with a scroll attached to it. And they come and get the leader of the Huguenots, and he opens it up, and he says, we'll let you all go free as long as you're willing to worship our king. And the leader says, go get me a scroll. They bring him one, and he writes something on it. He fastens it to the spear, and he throws it back over the wall. Some soldier grabs it. He brings it to the general, to the leader of all the armies. He opens it up, and it says, we have a king, Jesus. So we get to decide. Who's our king during this time? Who do we serve? And maybe it could be someone that's a mean king like Herod in your life. Or maybe you know someone, and if they heard this right now today, they'd say, nobody's my king. No one's my boss. No one rules overneath me. And so they would be the king in the kingdom of me. They would be their own king. So if you meet someone like that, ask them a question this year. Say, are you a kind king to yourself and others? Are you a king that can control the future? Have all your choices been best for you? You, the king in the kingdom of me? Can you forgive your sins and take away your guilt in the kingdom of me? The wise men have made a decision in all their wisdom. I don't have all the answers in the kingdom of me. I'll need a different king. And so they make an exchange. Lots of things can be our king. Money can be my king. My parents can be my king. It's whoever I serve. And the wise men decide, I'm making an exchange this year. And you think about it, how could they look at a little baby and know that that baby could be a king? There was a family that about this time of the year, the baby was born, and it's about 2 months later, and it's right around Christmas time. And the mom and dad see the older sister, she's only five, creep into the baby's room. And they think, what is she doing? It's fairly late at night. She came out of her bedroom. And they go over and they crack the door and they listen. And she's over rocking the bassinet. And she said, little brother, little brother, little brother, tell me about Jesus. I'm starting to forget. We all know, don't we? Of course, if we can calm down long enough and all the Frosty the Snowman and presents and sleigh rides and reindeer and stuffed turkey and stuffing and stuffing and more stuffing and presents that we're going to get and, you know, Christmas morning and Christmas trees and all of the stuff, if we could calm down long enough, we all know, don't we, where we stand with him. We all know if he's faded. We just know that. And the wise men see the little baby, and somehow they know. They know on the inside, oh, yes, okay. And it says that they worship him. Write that in your notes. It's the next sort of takeaway for the weekend. What do you worship? This story was originally written in Greek, and the word worship means to bow down before, to kneel. When is the last time you got on your knees before God? Because it's okay to drive your car and pray, that's great, and walk around and pray. Those are all good. There's millions of different ways to pray. You don't have to stand and close your hands or anything. All that's fantastic. Just the question, though, is when is the last time you knelt before the Lord? You just got onto your knees. We're talking about being humble. The story, I was at the bank the other day, and I rush in my Forerunner, and I'm in a real hurry, and they have handicap spots all up front. And then I notice right at the very edge of the handicaps, kind of in the best place to park, is not marked as handicap. I'm like, right on, you know. So I pull in there, and I get out of my truck, and I'm heading into the bank, and there's a lady there, older lady, kind of helping her husband. He's in a walker. And as I walk by, she says to me, as only an older lady can, I don't see no handicap sticker on that car. And, at that moment, you want to go hand on the hip on her. Excuse me? Just wish she had a little bit more rhythm, like my wife, but I don't go there because I don't. I said, oh, ma'am, that's not marked for handicap. If you look, it's not marked. All these others are, but this one isn't marked for handicap. She kind of looks at it and growls a little bit, and I went into the bank. I'm standing in line there, and it's a pretty long line. I look down the way a little later, and here comes the husband on the walker, and she's walking in front of him, and she comes up, and she looked different immediately, softer, and her voice was different. She said, I'm sorry. So my husband asked me why I was screaming at you. I was like, yes. So I didn't notice that parking space didn't have a handicap sign on it. Her face was so soft. She said, I'm sorry for yelling at you. And I was like, I understand. I feel the same way you do, you know. I was like, I was with this family one time, and they had a special needs girl, and And kind of the same thing happened. We were outside of the porch at church, and we had some handicapped stalls. And somebody at church had parked this handicapped stall, and this mom looked at it, and she goes, they're not handicapped. And our guitar player was this big, burly guy, and walks by and goes, you need them to be? So, I mean, I understand, you know. But here was the amazing thing. Why do we avoid humility when it feels so good once we have stepped into it? She was like a whole different person when she stepped into humility. And I know as we look at humility, and maybe it's because we confuse it with humiliation, but they're not the same. Humiliation is when someone makes me feel lower and they push my face in the dirt and make me feel bad and low. But the Bible says that if I'll humble myself in the sight of the Lord, that he'll actually lift me up and I'll be higher. When I first met the girl, she seemed pretty low, mad, angry, bitter. And then when she stepped into humility, it was like she was just sailing along, not afraid of a thing. And it says that they worshiped Jesus. And they opened their treasures for him. Who do you need to humble yourself before this year? And you've been avoiding it because when you think about it, it initially feels like humiliation. They're going to rub my face in it. They're going to rub my nose in it. But in fact, if you'll take that step, God will lift you up. You won't go down low. You'll end up higher. Who are you going to see at Christmas dinner or somewhere? And you really do need to humble yourself and either say you're sorry or forgive me or something. And give God a chance to lift you up. The wise men come all this direction. They've been through a lot. And they kneel before God. And they put their treasures out there. I brought something today. I put it up there so you could see it. That's my ugly hand. But this is a little battery. Over 10 years ago, I was invited to go to the eastern part of Russia and do some teaching at churches. So I went there. I didn't know much about it, but I knew somebody there. They would you come? And so I went there. And part of the trip was going to be to go to an orphanage. And I know orphanages are rough here, but in this part of Russia, it was unbelievably rough. And yet these people that were, these Christian ladies, Christ followers that were caring for these children were so filled with love, and it was just spreading through these kids. It was amazing because they had nothing. I mean, keeping them fed was the chore every day. It was so humbling to just be there and see how somehow God made something out of nothing for these kids every single day. And there was this one little girl, I didn't even ever get to know her name, but I'll never forget her face. And it was time to go. We were getting into the van, and I'd seen her a lot throughout the time. And she came over, and she just stood before me with the greatest peppermint patty smile, and she put this in my hand. She gave me something that she treasured. Can you imagine if this was all you had, and you gave it away to a stranger? I have a treasure box at home. I know it's kind of girly, so give me a break. But I have a treasure box at home, and this is in it. Someday I'll pass this on to my kids. It doesn't even work. It's all rusted out. But it meant a lot to me because it meant so much to her. Have you ever had someone give you a treasure? Something they treasured? That's what this story is talking about. Because the wise men humbled themselves, they did something that's a little hard to understand. They were able to make God feel like that little girl made me feel that day. It was something that nobody else would value, something so small. Would you like to give God a treasure on his birthday? Remember, it's his birthday. Would you like to give him a treasure this year? What if you were just to mention to someone at work that you're a Christ follower? He treasured that. What if you were to tell someone this Christmas, you know, no matter what happens, I know Jesus loves me, and you were to say his name, and he treasured that. Before you opened the presents this year, what if you got everybody together in a circle and you just looked up it to Jesus and said, Jesus, we love you. And he treasured that. Or what if sometime this season, all by yourself, somewhere where no one can see you but him, what if you just got on your knees, just like this, and you just lifted your hands like this. And he treasured that. Because he knew that nobody does this except to him. And those are all pretty simple. It's like this little battery. It doesn't cost hardly anything, but it goes so deep. I've gotten so many different things for Christmas in my life that are broken and gone. I watched my kids get presents when they were little and they forgot about them in 2 weeks. This isn't going anywhere. Someone gave me this from their heart. What can you give God this year from your treasure chest? It won't be hard. You can bless him. Now here's the big idea, and write it in your notes. The big idea, and the bottom line, is when we find Jesus, we can choose a better way. In Texas, there's been this big controversy going on. this guy wanted to build a bar in this town, and the Baptist church started praying and picketing and praying that he wouldn't be able to build the bar. Well, wouldn't you know it, lightning hit the bar and burned it down. So the bar took the church to court. And the church said, wait a minute, you can't sue us for natural disasters. So they asked the judge, what are you going to decide? And here's what he said, I don't know what I'm going to decide. But it appears that we have a bar owner who believes in the power of prayer and a church who does not. Christmas is the season that we get to decide, do we believe all this stuff? Or how much do we believe all this stuff? Or am I willing to consider if I want to believe all this stuff? Amongst all the snowballs and sleigh rides and candy canes and red-nosed reindeer, the story, the Christmas story, for the original king and the baby king and the family and the wise men and the shepherds, was everybody got to decide, am I going to believe this stuff? And of course, there's so many different people. Am I going to start to believe this stuff? Am I willing to? No, come on. Science has proved that stuff. Come on. I don't need that. Some people say that being with Jesus is a crutch. I knew this one guy said, no, it's not. It's a gurney. Way better than a crutch. Because he carries me. And you know, you read little stories about the person walking in the sand. Just about everybody's seen that. And then there's two footprints. And then through the really hard time, Lord, how come there was only one set of footprints? And it's so charming. Oh, that, because that's when I was carrying you, child. And it was like, oh. I'm feeling my feminine side. But the real question is, am I going to believe all this stuff when I can't pay for Christmas? Or my car breaks down, or I can't lose the weight, or my kids are off the chart again? Am I going to believe all this stuff when the credit card bills come rolling in, when someone else gets the promotion, when I don't look like I want to, when my mother says the same thing that she said last year that makes me feel like crap, am I going to believe all this stuff? Am I going to believe it? Or am I just going to go to church? Or am I just going to open my presents? Am I going to believe all of this stuff? And the wise men, look what it says about them. When it was time to leave, they returned to their own country by another route. For God had warned them in a dream not to return to Herod. A different way, a better way. Am I going to believe all this stuff? Yesterday, I got to perform a wedding for a man that I work with. He asked me quite a while ago if I would consider performing a wedding for him and the woman that he's been with for the last 3 years. And both of them have been through a tremendous amount. They've been through marriages that didn't work out. So they're both really super scared about getting married. And she finally agrees that they're going to get married. And so he asked me if I'd perform the wedding. It was a tremendous honor. So I even put a tie on, and I went to the wedding, and I was dressed for the wedding. And all their relatives came to their house, and they didn't want to make a big thing of it, but people wanted to make a big thing of it. They were like, wow, man, you guys are finally going to do it, you know. And man, this girl had she just had this beautiful wedding dress, and she's got like a full sleeve, so it was like a pretty amazing sight to see her come out. And she came out, and they were standing in front of me, and we went through the ceremony. It was good and everything. And I said to them all these different things that they could be as husband and wife, and I said these different things that they could be for each other, and I quoted and said lots of different things about love. And then when I got all done, and it was probably startling to everybody that was there, because the religious people were there, when they got all done, I looked at them, I said, and you won't be able to do most of these things. You'll want to. I said, you know, nobody ever really gets divorced because they wanted to be a jerk. Right on, I was a jerk, I get to be divorced. I said, they're not able to be who they want to be. And I said, all the things that I've said to you today, they sound so great, but most of them you won't be able to do unless you go another way, another route with another person, unless you walk with Jesus. When you are at the bottom, don't say, man, I got to pull myself up on my bootstraps. I got to try to do this. Don't go there. Go here. And get before Jesus and say, I can't do this. But with you, I can. And I saw the pressure just sort of melt away in their life. Oh, we're not alone? And I hope that's what Christmas can be for you this year. Amongst all of it, you're not alone.